The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Heinke Digital presents. Damocles, an audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 8. The plan. I rolled out of the service elevator. I was back on the same floor as the lab where I woke up. Now I could see the entire scene from the opposite end of the corridor. Looking for signs of life, I activated the robot's scanner. Three individuals were inside the lab. Two had been strapped to gurneys. Another person was standing. The scan showed the silhouette of a woman. I identified her as Dr. Parker. "Hey, Bob," I asked the robot. "Do you have any weapon systems at your disposal?"
"Are you kidding me?"
"Just asking."
"I am a robot that scans books, not a Terminator."
I examined the other rooms with the scanner. I found that many of them had old lab equipment cluttered in them. And then I finally discovered another room. The room showed no signs of life, but it contained mannequins. "What are these mannequins, Bob?"
"They have human proportions,"
replied the robot.
"However, they have no signs of life. Their density is surprisingly high for mannequins."
"I'll have to look at that," I replied. I rolled up to the door. The door was locked. "Can you open this door?" I asked Bob.
"Of course. All I need is the key."
"I don't have it."
"Then don't."
"How powerful is your laser?" I asked.
"It's only for scanning."
"That's not what I asked. Is your laser strong to cut through a door latch?" It took Bob some time to reply.
"It is,"
he finally said. After 20 seconds of using Bob's laser on the latch, I unlocked the door. I rolled inside. The room contained almost a dozen mannequins. They were all covered with a thick layer of dust. Under the dust trudged some clothing from different eras. Some mannequins wore only underwear, while others were naked. They lined up as if they were just waiting for someone like me. Eight mannequins were female, while four were male. I drove Bob through this strange trellis of frozen bodies until I realized the faces and proportions of the female dolls reminded me of someone. "Siv," I thought, "can you hear me?"
"I can. What is it?"
"I don't think someone destroyed your body. It is here with seven other copies of yourself." A lengthy silence followed. The duration made me question the connection's stability. "Siv, are you still there? Are you disconnected?"
"No, Joseph, the connection is still there. It's just not possible. I had a sister once, Brit. She was my twin. She got destroyed 10 years ago. But I didn't know that more copies of my version existed. That's just unimaginable."
I had the feeling that something shook Siv to her foundations. "How would you have felt if you discovered you had a dozen additional siblings?"
"See for yourself, Siv," I thought,
and let the robot's receptor sweep over the figures.
"My God, they've spotted all these copies of us all over the world, and kept it secret."
A voice buzzed from the speaker.
"Service robot AA-23, what is your goal in this room?"
It was the voice of Bridget. Before I could activate the speakers, Bob beat me to the answer.
"I'm attempting to tidy this room. It's scheduled for cleaning."
"No, it is not supposed to be. The cleaning schedule is incorrect."
"All right, got it."
I steered the robot back out.
"We need to change the plan, Joseph," Siv said.
"Why?"
"If you retrieve the silver box, then I can transfer back into my body. I could finally be myself again."
"Although I'm happy for you, my top priority is getting the girls out. But if I have my physical body back, I can help you with that. I don't have an implant that you can manipulate. Except for Damocles mode, I'm immune to many attacks."
"I will think about it," I replied.
"There is nothing to think about.
As an android, I am also just a machine for you. That's the point, right? Therefore, I have a lower priority for you than someone of your own species. Isn't it so? Maybe. No, it is. You're right. I'm sorry, Siv. You don't deserve this. No one deserves this. But the girls are in acute danger. Dr. Parker is in the lab with them. I heard Siv let out a deep sigh. No, you're right, Joseph. The girls need to be saved. I don't know what to do. This robot has no weapons. It's like bringing a knife to a firefight. Silence filled the air once more, Siv seemed to think. Yes, you do. You have a weapon. You just need to use it. I mentally reviewed all the steps I had discussed with Siv. Bob was also involved. The robot was taking the biggest risk. My first action was driving the robot into the room with the cleaning supplies. Sam enthusiastically greeted the robot. I didn't dare to use my voice over the speaker system. So I petted Sam as best I could with the short little arms of the robot. At least Sam was safe here. I'll get you out quickly, you'll be fine. Then, I had to move on. If you've ever tried mixing a Molotov cocktail with robot arms, I can tell you, join the club. It's really harder than it looks, isn't it? But with Bob's help, it finally worked. I stowed the cocktail in a side compartment that Bob had at his disposal. My robot hand grabbed the mop and bucket and went. The plan was simple. Disguised as Bob, I would enter the lab as a cleaning robot. To remain undetected, I would stealthily position the homemade incendiary bomb and activate it using the laser. The rooms lacked a sprinkler system. Dr. Parker would get himself and the girls to safety. In the confusion, I would use Bob to free the girls. After that, I would secure the silver box and try to use it to connect Siv to her body again. Nothing easier than that. Naturally, I had my doubts. These doubts were indeed justified. I park it right in front of the lab door. Using the handle of the mop as an extension, I knock it on the frosted glass of the lab door with Bob's little robotic arms. After the third knock, the door swung open. Dr. Parker looked at me. "Well, that was pleasantly fast," she said to my surprise. I did not know what Dr. Parker meant. The next moment I shifted the robot's receptor to focus on the two girls on the couches, and I understood. Both girls wore helmets with sensors. A device was connected to a side room. The girls seemed to be lying inside a colossal metal dragon's mouth. On the forehead of the dragon, like a third eye, was the silver box. A holder embedded in the silver box and laser beams illuminated it. I assumed they represented a data link between the silver box and the device. The procedure was likely unpleasant for Kim and Jenny. Both girls had their bladders emptied. "What are you waiting for?" Dr. Parker asked me. "Clean this up, quick." To my amazement, Bob had protocols up his sleeve for cleaning up such a mishap. Bob resumed the controls. Meanwhile, I waited for an opportunity to place the incendiary bomb. Finally, Dr. Parker turned to the device. "It's time for me to place the firebomb, Bob. I'll take over." "No need, a slight change of plans," Siv's voice announced in my head. "What?" "I'm waiting for Dr. Parker to remove her glasses," Siv explained. "Don't worry, I swear, I will free the girls. Our chances will be much better once I get my body back." "No, Siv, this was not the plan." I tried to take control of Bob, but Siv already had taken control. I watched in frustration as Siv steered the robot back to Dr. Parker. I tried to figure out what she wanted to accomplish and how she planned to get it done. Siv did it by lifting the mop a little too high, causing the urine mixed with the mop water to splash a little higher than intended. A few drops landed on Dr. Parker's face and glasses. "Yuck, disgusting, watch it, you big klutz." She took off her glasses and glared at the robot. Suddenly, I understood what Siv was trying to do. "No," I shouted in my mind. But it was already too late. The two brief pulses of the laser blinded Dr. Parker. She screamed in pain and put her hands in front of her face. Siv turned the laser to maximum power. Initially, the laser caused her hands to burn. Dr. Parker ripped them off as she screamed in pain. One eye was penetrated by the laser. In a split second, the laser cooked the eyeball, turning it white and causing it to burst. Then the laser pierced Dr. Parker's brain. She died and immediately collapsed to the ground. Siv spun the robot around. She destroyed the camera sensors above the door. Bridget, the lab guard, noticed something, but what could she do? She had no influence on Bob's protected partition. The girls were unaware of the situation. They were still groggy from the anesthesia. With the laser, Siv cut the cables of the helmets the girls were wearing. She used the handle of the mop to remove the silver box from the third eye socket of the device. It fell. With the superhuman dexterity of an artificial intelligence, she caught the silver box as it fell and stowed it in the robot's belly. There, one down. Now I'll get my body back. If the girls get hurt because you went alone, may God help you. Anger filled my mind. I am an artificial life form, Joseph, so I don't know if your God is in charge of me, but I assure you, I will do everything in my power to prevent any further harm to the girls. With these words, she steered Bob back out into the hallway. As Siv maneuvered the robot through the corridor, Bridget's voice resonated from the loudspeakers.
Stop, service robot AA-23. You are operating outside your parameters. Can you explain your actions in that lab? I'm getting no data from there.
Siv disregarded Bridget's voice and confidently rolled into the room with her fellow powered down androids.
We will deactivate you now, service robot AA-23.
Try. Siv mocked. I could hear her thoughts but could not join the conversation. Siv had taken complete control of Bob.
How can you communicate at all, bitch? You're in the silver box. How can that be?
Siv did not answer. She had almost reached the door. So Bridget drew her own conclusions.
Somehow you hacked into the memory of this robot. I can't control this device. It's only a matter of time.
Blah, 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 Siv thought. She opened the door. I watched her go through it. In front of us, I found myself in a wheelchair, unconscious. Seeing myself like that was a strange experience. The real me looked heavier and less attractive than I had expected. The image flickered.
If you don't stop right now, I swear I'll kill the old man, bitch.
Bridget threatened over the screeching PA system. The red sword of Damocles appeared above my image. Siv, we have lost. We have to give up. Siv paid no attention to me. She walked through the trellis of her brothers and sisters. She was looking for her own body. One of the female dolls caught her attention, and she stopped.
This is your last warning, Siv,
Bridget's voice declared. Siv ignored her as well. She took the silver box from Bob's inside. With Bob's small arms, she opened the box.
Just a few more minutes and I'll regain control of the service robot. Apparently, there is a protected partition with an alternate personality in the robot's memory. I'm going to get access to it, and I'm also going to kill it.
Siv, I thought. I was getting more and more desperate. She's on to us. Unlike you, I have no backup memory. If the sword of Damocles falls, I'm finished. Please, Siv, let's find another way. But Siv ignored me. I don't know if you can imagine this. Begging for my life was a first. I had no control over the situation. Everything seemed unreal. I knew this feeling. I had experienced it in moments of existential crisis, when one of my best friends stole my first girlfriend, when first my father and then my mother died. I stood at the grave of the first person younger than me. It was a colleague. I thought of many missions, of countless murders. Did they experience the same emotions I did? Had they also felt the urge to beg for their lives, or at least to ask, to say please, not yet. Please, I don't want to die yet. I don't want to go. I'm sorry, Joseph. Siv whispered in a sad tone. I told you when we first met I have a strong survival instinct. Siv, no.
I have access to Bob,
Bridget exclaimed triumphantly. Siv told Bob to push the button.
You asked for it.
Two things happened. First, Bob's movement froze, then Bob's receptor stopped working. Everything went dark for a moment. I noticed a reddish glow of light above me. I raised my head. Light radiated from the Sword of Damocles. It seemed to glow from within. I felt tears rolling down my cheeks. I cried like a baby, for now I was going to die. Through the veil of tears, I saw a figure standing before me. It was Bridget. She was wearing a white dress, bathed in the sword's light. It had a soft pink hue reminiscent of cherry blossoms. "Was I right, Mr. Lenke?" "About what?" I asked. "That this sieve only pursues her own goals, that she doesn't care about you?" I wanted to hate her. I wanted to spit at her for what she had done to Simon. But she was right. A strange calm came over me. I had made my peace. I didn't want to spend my last moments on Earth hating anyone. "Yes, Bridget, you were right." She looked at me, proud and unyielding. "Then you will suffer the consequences," she said. The sword fell. Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital Audiobook Podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.